Hello, my name is Mike Diedrich, and this recording will be part of a Memorial Day broadcast on KODX 96.9 for Veterans for Peace, Daniel Ellsberg, Chapter 92. I'm going to read a statement from Veterans for Peace and National Office written by Jerry Condon and Michael McPherson. And then this will be followed by an audio interview with five Veterans for Peace Chapter 92 members interviewed today, Sunday, or Monday. And the statement from Jerry Condon, written by Jerry Condon and Michael McPherson, is this. This Memorial Day weekend, Veterans for Peace is calling on its members and friends to reflect on the gravity of the day, whose official purpose is to honor all those who died in service of the U.S. during peacetime and war. Veterans for Peace chooses to honor all those who died, both combatants and civilians. Our hope is that a sober accounting of the casualties of war will mitigate against the tendency to turn Memorial Day, like Veterans Day, into a patriotic celebration of U.S. militarism. We remember the words of President Dwight Eisenhower, who during World War II was the supreme commander of the Allied Expeditionary Force in Europe. He said, "War is a grim, cruel business, a business justified only as a means of sustaining the forces of good against those of evil." He also famously stated, "I hate war as only a soldier who has lived it can, only as one who has seen its brutality, its futility, its stupidity." Medal of Honor winner Marine Corps General Smedley Butler took it a bit further. He said, "War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the loss in life." Veterans for Peace is deeply familiar with the pain that emanates from the loss of those lives. We have lost too many friends in wars in foreign lands and in their aftermath at home due to suicide and service-related diseases. We have spent countless hours with Gold Star families mourning the loss of their loved ones. We also recognize that the enemy killed by our bullets and bombs had family and friends who loved them too. Their pain is no different than ours. Brown University's Cost of War Project estimated that over 7,000 U.S. service members have died in the wars following 9/11. Perhaps even more disturbing is the fact that more than 8,000 U.S. contractors have lost their lives in these conflicts. These hidden deaths reflect the U.S. government's deception regarding these wars and its disregard for those who perish in them. The poet and writer Viet Thanh Nguyen estimates that the United States in Southeast Asia is responsible for 7 million deaths directly and indirectly. More than 15,000 deaths mentioned above do not account for the 6,000 veterans who died by suicide each year between 2001 and 2022, totaling more than 145,000 people, as documented by the nonprofit Stop Soldier Suicide. Veterans face a 58% higher risk of suicide than non-veterans. While military contractors experience many of the same mental health challenges as veterans, reliable suicide and mental health statistics are not available. We must help build a peaceful world based on mutual respect for the human rights of all, as well as for the rights of nature. Civilian casualties are much greater. We must acknowledge that in modern warfare, it is civilians who make up the bulk of the dead and wounded. The number of civilians killed by the violence is in the point of the 9/11 wars is staggering. Brown University estimates the low end of opposition deaths at 288,000 and civilian deaths at 408,000. The total number of direct violence-related deaths is estimated to be over 900,000 people, and even more people die after the war ends. A May 2023 Brown University study estimated that there are 3.5 to almost 4 million indirect deaths, with a near-death total of 4.5 to 4.7 million people in post-9/11 war zones. As we mark 50 years since the end of the U.S. war in Vietnam, we do not forget that 3 million Vietnamese died in that unjust and necessary war, most of them civilians. Endless war and suffering persists today, with tens of thousands dying in conflicts that are fueled by U.S.-supplied arms and intelligence. The U.S. was an instigator of the terrible war in Ukraine, where hundreds of thousands of young soldiers have perished. The U.S. continues to provide bombs and political cover for the unspeakable genocide in Gaza, where estimates of civilian deaths range from 50,000 to over 100,000, with an even greater number of life-altering wounds. A generation of young Palestine amputees and double and triple amputees will be a sober reminder to the world for years to come. Another victim of the war is the U.S. economy, which is greatly distorted by the ever-ballooning military budget now proposed to reach $1 trillion a year, even as essential social programs vital to poor and working-class families are being gutted. The modernization of nuclear weapons is included in the budget of both the Department of Defense and the Department of Energy, totaling an estimated $946 billion over the next decade. And hearkening to a no-holds-barred era that could easily lead to a nuclear war. 80 years after the U.S. dropped nuclear bombs on the civilian populations of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it is high time to put an end to war before it puts an end to civilians, human civilizations. War must be universally deemed obsolete, illegal, and unacceptable, to say nothing of immoral. Wars will not end, however, and nuclear war will not be averted unless there is a sea change in the thinking of the U.S. people and our political leaders. We must abandon the military doctrine of seeking full-spectrum dominance in every corner of the globe. We must embrace the emerging multipolar world and take our place as one nation going among many. We must help to build a peaceful world based on mutual respect for the human rights of all, as well as for the rights of nature. As the Vietnam-era poster reads, war is not good for children or other living things. This Memorial Day, let us honor the memory of the dead by pledging to protect our precious planet, its people, and its environment. Rather than exalting war, we must come together. My name is Michael Diedrich, and this is Veterans for Peace, Daniel Ellsberg, Chapter 92, and we are doing a group chat talking about Memorial Day, and what that means to veterans, among others, and what it means for Americans. And with me are Kelly Wadsworth, Daniel Gilman, Kim, and Michael McPherson. And Michael's going to give a few thoughts as executive director of VFP National to start things off. Go ahead, Michael.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. Memorial Day is a really sad day, I think, because I do think of friends who have passed away, veterans, of course, but I also think about all the people who have died in wars, be they combatants or civilians, and mostly civilians die in wars. And I don't think that much of the country really gives thought They give lip service, but I don't even think they really give thought as to what this day really means when it comes to the deaths, even of veterans, or I should say, what we call the fallen of our own nation, and the impact it has on the families. And if you agree with the wars or not, because we as Veterans for Peace, we look at the wars the U.S. has been conducting and see them as not for protecting our nation, but for other reasons. So we don't see that the fallen have died for a good reason. And that's a hard thing to for a person to think about, that my son or my daughter or my husband or my wife, that sacrifice, because it's a sacrifice, that they die for something other than something honorable. That's a real difficult thought. So most people don't want to face that. I think people don't really look at US foreign policy for what it is. But I think we also have to recognize that in all myths, because what this is a myth, much of this, in all myths, there's some truth. And the truth just being that, just on a historical basis, warriors across the ages and societies have protected that society. And we have that happening in different places around the world today, where one country attacks another, and then people in that country defend that country. So they take that truth, that kernel of truth, and they build this whole myth around it. And one of the things, I just heard it today in the news, and this is so true, the gentleman said that he doesn't want people to just be upset and mourn. He wants people to celebrate Memorial Day, because he wants people to look at the sacrifice and emulate it. And that is part of building the soldier. That's part of the myth. So they lift us up. I mean, you're talking about a known soldier memorial with an eternal flame. And you can look at that as a person who's thinking about going in the military, and you're saying, wow, if I died, that would be for me. That's a powerful image, a powerful thing to help build the future soldier. And again, it's all part of this myth of what we supposedly do for the country. And people, again, I'll just say in closing to that, is that people, it's really difficult to look at the truth of what this nation is doing or supporting, like in Gaza right now, and say, oh, maybe our foreign policy is wrong. Maybe all these people who died in Vietnam died for not for the reasons that I've been told. That's not an easy thing.
Yeah, Michael, I agree with that. That one of the things particularly difficult is for a veteran, especially somebody who's been in a war, to come back and look in the mirror and say, well, what I did maybe was not that cool. Maybe it was people I killed I shouldn't have. And maybe what was it worth? And that's a hard conversation to have personally. But it's a conversation that is useful if you want to bring the conversation forward to the society at large. So I don't know, Pastor Kelly, as our second former captain, you can add to Michael's remarks. Kelly?
I don't know if I even have very much to add to Michael's remarks
Sure.
because he really hit the nail on the head with the ways that things that are true, things that are sometimes beautiful and sacrifice for someone else and duty and honor can be high ideals that we live up to, but they're being exploited mercilessly at the moment. With a bunch of lies rolled in. And so it is, I do think it's a hard thing at the moment. On this day, I'm always so mindful of the ways that two things can be true at the same time. So my experience was there can be duty and honor and sacrifice at the lowest level. I mean, among the ranks, the troops on the front line, and they really can behave honorably. At the same time, the war can be immoral. It can be illegal. It can be poorly thought out. It can be an adventure war. It can be unnecessary. Like all of those things can be true at the same time at the two different levels. And so it makes it even more sort of heartbreaking that we take the very best of some of our young people and squander it needlessly. Like there are times, like Michael mentioned, that there is a true need for defense, but I have not, I'm not sure I've seen that yet in my lifetime. One of the things I'm also mindful of is where I'm at, just the ways that we collectively start to withdraw support from our young people when they're young teenagers, and we start to collapse their horizons so that military service for many becomes the only viable path that we have carved for them. In the district I'm in, just the ways that sort of preparations for the future and the horizon of the future starts getting curtailed, not just by societal forces or folks close to these young people, but by the institution themselves, by the city, by the district. And it curtails what they might do in their future, so that by the time they're 17, there's really not much left because we've disinvested from them from, I mean, I think you could argue from 0 onward, but real specifically, sort of 13 and 14 years old onward, a lot of our high schools just, don't map out a plan, and then the recruiters fill the vacancy and off they go. So it's not necessarily a real choice, or there's not necessarily a lot of space to do and try other things before going into the service, which then sort of then it sells this whole story of patriotism and heroism to folks for whom other pathways have not been cultivated for them. So it This is just a very complicated day for me.
Sort of getting back to, well, you and Michael also said is that for veterans, particularly who have been to war, is not only do you have the burden of the experience of the war, but then when it comes back, realizing what that experience was and what you did in that war and what does that mean. But then if you want to talk about it, to explain that to your friends or the family or the larger public, having the burden to explain that to society is a difficult one. And that's one of the things that I think this a conversation like this might help. But it's as always for the individual soldier, they're the ones that bear the burden of everything. Not only do they bear the burden of the psychological and physical damage of the war, but then they have to live in a society who doesn't want to hear about this sort of thing. A day like today, when you're said, well, as they use euphemism like fallen, which I grates on my ear. I says, well, these people are actually dead, and some of them died rather difficult deaths, grisly. You don't want to see that sort of thing in a these pious sort of platitudes about Memorial Day. So,
Michael,
go ahead.
I want to add to what you said, like these euphemisms, and I think a lot of times we use these broad terms, soldier, airman, we use titles, we do use their names, but I think the thing that we leave out that's one of the most impactful pieces of information is their age. Like the families don't forget. I, as a chaplain, I buried a lot of them, but I think if the more we can get back to the fact that we are burying babies,
Yeah.
like, I mean, it just it, in the very first steps of adult life, I mean, teenagers and like in kids in their young 20s, I mean, kids that you would not be able to tell the difference if they were 21 or 16, because, right, like they just were so youthful still. You're just like, these are babies and children. Like, this is insane that we send them to war.
Well, one of the things that I sort of attached, I don't know if you all got it, but it was a quote from Kipling. Kipling is a 19th century, I think he's a British poet, very, very short poem. He says, "If any questions why we died, tell them because our fathers lied." And in this case, our fathers is the country, our society. And they lied and we died. Very short sort of a sentiment. And for somebody like Kipling, who was a spokesperson for British imperialism, really, in many ways, for him to say something like this is kind of interesting. The other thing, as I mentioned, the handout was the Wilfred Owen, a World War I British poet who was killed in the war, just before armistice, actually. And called it the, when talking about how sweet it is to die for your country, he called it the old lie. Kim, did you have something that you wanted to add?
Yes, I do.
Thanks.
I'll introduce myself, Kim Hunter. I'm a veteran of two deployments to Vietnam, and yeah, I just thought of something that had that I was involved in a couple of years ago, Kelly, that resonated with what you just last said. I stopped going to Memorial Day celebrations many, many years ago because it was just, I recognize this country is just so immersed in a hyper-militarized culture. You just get a full dose of it everywhere you go, and you just get a one-sided, excuse me, of a dog's. Sorry, Mike,
We
but
are
here we
there.
are. We got you got the 4th of July, you got Veterans Day, you got Memorial Day, you got all your militaristic stuff at sports games and college graduations and high school graduations. You get the same message everywhere that we have these brave fighting, usually men, who step up to defend the honor of our country and risk their lives to protect our freedom. And it's just some version of the same basic thing. And I know from my personal experience it's just a bunch of baloney. So, but anyway, I was back in Naples, New York, visiting some family, and it was Memorial Day. And Naples, their big thing happens to be a Memorial Day celebration and parade and everything else. So I said, of course I'll go as a family member. So during the Memorial Day ceremonies, it was the usual thing, the whole thing. And this particular speaker was very long-winded. He went on and on every all the way from the American Revolution to the forever wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And he ticked off all the battles that were fought everywhere, and how our fighting men were involved in these battles, and all the victories we had. And when he got up to Vietnam, he talked about Khe Sanh and Hamburger Hill and Oshawa Valley, and how our courageous fighting men were protecting our freedom there too. And like they all volunteered to go over there. And well, one, no, half of them were drafted, but they weren't fighting for our freedom at all. I knew that even before I went. So anyway, I had heard about enough of that. So when the thing finally wound down, I told my family that I'll go wait back at the car. I parked about a block and a half away because they're getting ready to shoot off a big volley of cannons. They've got these cannons set up, and they're going to do this big artillery thing with shooting blanks and making a lot of noise, and I didn't care for that. So I was waiting at the car, and a woman about my age was walking up the sidewalk, And she said, "Well, I don't really need to listen to any artillery fire." And I said, "Well, I don't either, because I heard enough of that to last a lifetime over in Vietnam." And she stopped and she wheeled around and she looked at me and she said, "You know, I'm old enough to remember all that. And what a tragedy that was. They just sent boys. They sent boys over there to be killed." And yeah, that was so touching. And it made me realize that just because a lot of Americans go to these events, it doesn't mean they buy into what they're hearing. There are voices out there that are willing to speak a different message, and there are ears that are willing to hear a different message. And if our chapter can be involved in providing an alternative message about Memorial Day, what it should mean, I think that would be a good thing.
Well, following up that message of boys is, you know, I spent a year in Vietnam as an interrogator linguist, and I talked to many, many, many prisoners, and many of them were just boys, like we were boys. I was an older guy. I mean, at 23, I was an old man in Vietnam considered, but many of the Americans were not. They were, like Kelly says, teenagers. But it was a situation where we had our children killing their children. One of the things that we do is this chapter and other chapters is we distributed Memorial Day and also Veterans Day, also Peace Poppies and the Peace Pledge Union, which actually started in 1933 in Great Britain. But it celebrates the fact that we should honor all dead of all wars, as Michael mentioned earlier, you know, all wars, if you're talking about Memorial Days, you have to memorialize all the dead of all the wars. So actually, you mentioned boys being, I was drafted, subsequently got enlisted, but our last speaker here, not the necessarily last speaker, but Dan Gilliam is a fellow draftee, ended up in the Army, as I believe. You've certainly got, last but not least, Daniel, give us a few pearls here.
Well, it's hard to follow up on all this, but I don't know if you caught the memorial that they were holding in D.C. PBS every year does this hour-long tribute to Memorial Day, and they have a concert and singers and lots of military brass. And so since we were having this thing this morning, I thought I'd listen to it. And it was pretty predictable. You know, they did give lip service to remembering and honor those that have died in all these wars. You know, the usual platitudes of, you know, freedom isn't free, and, you know, our soldiers have been protecting our democracy all around the world, these kind of things. And they went through all the wars since World War II. And, you know, there was certainly things to say about World War II, where, you know, they were fighting fascism and, you know, the evils of Hitler and the Holocaust and all that. But it certainly made us out to be the ones that won the war, which really isn't true. We certainly helped, but when it came to Vietnam, it was interesting, especially as a medic over there. I was wondering what they were going to say, because, you know, we lost that war and it was unpopular and all that. But they focused in on the life-saving work of the medevacs, the helicopter pilots, the people that did the dust-offs and brought out the wounded, and how many lives were saved by the actions of the helicopter pilots and getting them to the hospitals, and comparing it to other wars where, you know, they didn't have this kind of rapid getting the wounded to good care. And so that was just interesting that, you know, there's not much else they could focus on, I don't think, because that was such a disaster. But, you know, they found a way to do it. I thought that was quite a trick that they did. But so, I mean, Memorial Day obviously is about memory, remembering, and to some extent, I think, honoring. I looked back and just to refamiliarize myself with the origins of the day, and it was firstly it was called Decoration Day, right after the Civil War, where the Union families put flowers, decorated the graves of Union soldiers, and to honor them in that way. And I read somewhere what they, at some point, they, South, the Confederates, families began to do the same. And it was, it kind of made me think, well, here you've got, you know, the North and the South, remembering and honoring the soldiers, but you can't quite say that it's right to honor those that were on the Confederate side, because they were on the wrong side. So, you know, I thought, well, when that makes us, when we're remembering the soldiers that have passed, we've got to think of the wars they fought, and were they right? Were they legal? Were they moral? So I think that's something that has to be looked at, and use our words wisely and discriminately in talking about when we're remembering those that have made the ultimate sacrifice. You know, and it's our leaders, it's our government that, you know, starts these wars overseas, you know, and they haven't been to defending the country, it's been to occupy and change governments, try to change governments and whatnot. So it is something that, but in remembering, we should realize that we don't, we need to stop these wars. I read somewhere where the modern proclamation of Memorial Day stated that by praying that we should honor and mourn the dead soldiers by praying according to their religious faith for permanent peace. So it's kind of like Armistice Day in a way, that, you know, that started out to be celebrating peace, armistice. And Memorial Day has roots in proclamations of needing to tie it to making peace and not making more dead soldiers. So I thought that was quite interesting. You know, I think we have to look at the wars and the, as we remember the dead and what the purpose was, what the mission was, what our government was trying to do.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting point, Dan, and that is in the American Civil War, there were several hundred thousand Confederate soldiers who died in that war. And those soldiers were Americans. They were Confederates, but they were Americans. And how do you remember them? You know, they are not eligible to be buried in national cemeteries. They are in state cemeteries, some of them. But, you know, they fought for this for the same reasons that many soldiers fight in any other wars in this country. They didn't know. They bought into the jingoism and the patriotism that their leaders were telling them, no less so than, say, soldiers who went to Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan. They think they're defending their country against, you know, God knows what. So these soldiers are victims. They're throwaways of wars. And, you know, we have to remember them for that, in the context of their governments telling them what to do and how to fight their wars. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, Dan, something you said made me think of a change in approach I would like to see when people talk about the sacrifices that people make when they put on a uniform and fight for their country, is that, you know, the word we're told to do is, well, let's honor their sacrifice. And the problem with honoring the sacrifice of a soldier, regardless of what the war is that by honoring their sacrifice, you're dishonoring the efforts of the people that they were fighting. And I agree with an earlier comment that, you know, if we're going to have a Memorial Day regarding those who have been lost in wars, we should remember all the folks that were lost in wars, regardless of whose side they were fighting on. And you don't say you honor their sacrifice. I think the best thing to do is to recognize their sacrifice, recognize that they sacrificed their lives for a cause they believed in, whether it was right or wrong. So it tends not to, you know, you got to stop taking sides on this stuff. My personal thing is, if you're going to recognize the sacrifice of the military personnel who were fighting in wars, why not all the other folks who died too? Because most of the people who die in wars now are civilians. And if we're going to have a Memorial Day that truly recognizes the loss from wars, we should make a specific recognition that the sacrifices that were borne by the civilian communities in some was far greater than those that were sacrificed by the folks in uniform. And, you know, and it's part of the notion that we in the Veterans for Peace is that we really need to educate people on what the true costs of war are. And people tend to focus on the loss of lives and the injuries of the folks that are in uniform and forget that the greater loss is occurring in the civilian populations that are victimized in the process.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Michael, please.
Thank you, Kim. So there's a few pieces of information I'm going to give you. One is that Jerry Condon, a board member, and I wrote a piece about Memorial Day. You can find it on Popular Resistance. And it speaks to, in part anyway, about the civilian deaths over the last 20 years plus Vietnam. Just trying to look at everyone who has been killed in wars, because, like we said here, that's the message we as Veterans for Peace attempt to bring. Another piece of information, though, is that what is probably the first Memorial Day. Yeah, it was during the Civil War, but it looks like it might have been May 1st in Charleston, 1865, where formerly enslaved African Americans and some missionaries came together and tried to give a decent burial to a bunch of Union soldiers that had been buried in a racetrack, apparently, in Charleston. So thousands of people came together and buried and honored those people's deaths. And I think, see, things are complicated, except when you get down to the fact that humans are trying to figure out how to live together, and we demonize each other and we treat each other extremely cruel, like what we're seeing in Gaza right now. So I say that because the Civil War was fought in part, but not wholly, because there was greed and all those things involved. But we know that slavery was the central question for the Civil War. So those Confederates, for various reasons, and I think it's the same reasons that you have poor whites today who defend things that impact them in a negative way. I think a lot of those poor white people who decided to fight for the Confederates, there's a sense of identity. I would have been a person who would have been enslaved. They were fighting to keep me enslaved, my ancestors enslaved. It's hard for me to look back on that era and like those enslaved or formerly enslaved people who decided to give a decent burial to those Union soldiers. They saw them as liberators because they were liberators. So, how do I honor or all dead? I honor that. But at the same time, my history says, how should I look at those Confederates who were fighting to keep me enslaved? That's not as, I can't just, you know what I mean? I just can't write, just put that aside, right? Especially because right now there's politics in this country that dates back to that. So it's this human question that is really at the root of this. And then as you move up, things become more complex. So even as a veteran for peace and wanting to, and of course, remembering the dead Confederate or Union or whoever they are, there's a point where I have some things to sort through that are real when it comes to what are my feelings about that era. And if I had been there, it would be really hard for me to look at those Confederates and be like, oh, you were fighting for the same reason that these Union soldiers were fighting. I couldn't really, that wouldn't be entirely true for me personally, right? So it's just a complex thing. So I just wanted to
Well,
put
absolutely,
that out
Michael.
there.
It, the and for those Confederate soldiers and for the culture that they lived in and fought for, they have yet to. And in fact, it's a major complication for this country's history, is that culture is they've yet to own up to that fact that they fought for the Confederacy, which was a racist, imperialistic, abuse of Africans. And supported the entire Southern economy and part of the Union economy too, matter of fact. But
That's right.
we have not, this country as a whole has not to it, and particularly the South has not owned up to that sort of important fact of American history. As far as that war goes, there were a number of battles with actually all black units in the Union Army, and a couple of engagements where they were fighting Confederate soldiers. And a number of the black Union soldiers were left on the battlefield, and the Confederates came back and murdered them as they lay there wounded. Which some of the Confederate leadership saw was, you know, particularly heinous. But I mean, if you're going to memorialize and remember the war and the people who fought, you're going to have to look at it. And there's some very, very ugly parts of American history, and that's part of it, you know, that they did fight stupidly and perhaps willingly to keep slaves in their place. You know, some of them owned slaves, so. You know, that's one of the when you're talking about Memorial Day, you have to talk about these truths. You can't move on as a country unless you speak this truth. So, thanks, Michael.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. One other thing that shows how our current government manipulates us. Because, and I didn't realize this, I knew contractors died in these post 9/11 wars, of course, but I didn't realize that, and I found this out as part of the research for this piece that Jerry and I wrote together, more contractors have died, over 8,000, as opposed to service members, which is a number over 7,000. So when we have Memorial Day and we're talking about, we want to use the euphemism of fallen or who died or whatever, these contractors are never brought up, you know, and many of them were serving in the same way as many of the service members who died. So it's just a total farce in many ways. I mean, a clear one, not even just like, you know, what you've been taught and what you should believe. This right here, you can just look at that. And I am actually outraged. And I love that Veterans for Peace, that in our bylaws that we recognize contractors who served in areas of conflict as equal to veterans, as their full members as well. We attempt to honor that reality.
Well, as a matter of fact, many of them, if not most of them, were veterans, yes. You know, the contractors.
Yeah.
And, of course, another name for that, you know, talking about contractors, is that they were mercenaries.
Yeah.
Paid for by the United States. They were mercenaries.
Right. But not all of them were veterans, because some of them,
no.
Like, I know, I can't remember who was telling me that they know one who is having post-traumatic stress. Of course, you know, just like we do,
right,
many
right.
of us, but doesn't get the benefits,
right.
You know, can't find a job, you know, all the things that veterans get. If we fight for it, sometimes we can get, this person can't. So I don't know what the percentages are, but that's another thing. I couldn't find anything because they're not really tracking it.
They did the same thing with the reservist units and National Guard units that were in Iraq and Afghanistan. These are, you know, some 40-year-old guys who were working in a factory, and they got shifted and sent to Iraq and Afghanistan for a 6 months or 8 months, and came back and they got shorted on their benefits. You know, they go to the VA and they say, "Well, you're not really a full-time veteran." You know. Go ahead, Kelly.
Kelly, we had this exact contractor situation happen when I was in country. Our very first death was a contractor, and it was a truck driver, but not an American. It was a third country national. And I was the chaplain of the unit, and we didn't really have a playbook for that. And I was like, all right, so what do we do? Do we do the same thing? Do we have honors? Do we have a little service? Do we do... what do we do? And turns out we do nothing. Like, this truck driver died in a convoy, in our convoy. And like, we never even like found out this person's name. And we put him in a box and sent him back to his own country. So we have people doing the same job with very different recognitions of whether they did it honorably, whether they deserve benefits, right? Like, you're like, but it's the same job. Like, they were in the same convoy. It was the same convoy as the American soldiers, but it was treated very differently. And you're like, but that roadside bomb could have gone off 20 feet later and it would have been an American vehicle and it would have been a very different story. You're like, but that this was a big discussion with my commander. And I was like, but a human life is a human life. And this person is now dead. And he was like, that is not our problem.
Sounds like the army.
Right?
Kelly,
Right? Like, yeah.
I was just going to say thank you for bringing that story to us because and this is like the brainwashing that happens because when I was having this discussion, someone brought up that exact thing. So it's like three categories. You have nationals or whatever is the appropriate term for people like that person who was killed. And there's thousands of those people that did jobs. So
Yeah.
how many of those were killed? There's contractors, US contractors, and then there's the service members. You know, so all the service members get all this recognition and the benefits and things. The contractors and those nationals don't get anything.
Right, they're disposable.
Disposable.
Well, I would argue that most American soldiers are disposable too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and then they use us in a different way than they use those other two. That's one it
This segment will actually fit rather nicely into a VFP 92 radio show, Graham. And I'm going to stop the recording saying this is Mike Diedrich for Veterans for Peace, Daniel Ellsberg chapter, with Kelly Wazer, Dan Gilwin, Kim Hunter, and Michael McPherson in VFP 92 first ever Memorial Day shout out 2025. Thank you all for participating.